Hi there, this is the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour from True Romance Magazine. It's called Beyond Any Doubt. Here's the story. I'm not letting you off the hook this year, Clarice. Tell me you're coming. Uncharacteristically, my sister Alina's voice rose a little on the last sentence. I already said I'll be there, a little exasperated by her persistence. I leaned back in my comfortable leather desk chair and sighed. What can I do to prove that I mean it? Swear an oath and sign your name in blood, Alina shot back. Seriously, did I sound like I was kidding, Claire? I laughed. All right. You've made your point. I'll see you on Christmas Eve. Make it a day or two before. If you don't, I'm sending Nate to get you. The threat didn't have many teeth. Alina's husband was a gentle giant who freely admitted he was a lover, not a fighter. Yet, I wouldn't be able to wriggle out of my promise to go home for the first time since our mother died 3 years ago. Just thinking about seeing Dad made my stomach clench, but I repeated my vow to my sister and hung up. After I double-checked my reservation at a new B&B in the area, I gave my attention to the pile of work on my desk and tried to forget all the reasons I didn't want to go back to Fredericksville, population 12,462. No, actually 12,460, since I'd permanently moved to Toronto and Leif Burrows had apparently just passed away. The thought made me smile. Even though Leif had taught me English in high school and I'd always liked her, what amused me was the fact that her death at the age of 80-something was such big news that Alina had felt the need to share it before starting to nag me about my Christmas visit. That was Fredericksville in a nutshell. No privacy, whether a person was coming into or departing this world, or for that matter, just leaving town, as I knew very well. Tongues were still wagging over my broken engagement to Stavros Papadrew, too, and that had happened nearly 10 years ago. Praying that local law enforcement wouldn't pull me over for going so far under the speed limit, I inched my car along the snow-clogged main street of Fredericksville. It seemed that Joe Fern, the local mechanic, who also drove the snowplow and the Zamboni at the hockey rink, must have been somewhere sleeping off his annual pre-Christmas eggnog binge, cursing Alina, the one-horse town, and the holiday season in general. I peered through the ice that obscured much of my windshield and prayed I hadn't missed the turn that would take me to the B&B. I hadn't, thankfully. I saw as I pulled up in front that it was the old Scarpella place, as I'd suspected, a sprawling red brick Victorian home that had once housed aristocracy. It now played host to tourists and prodigal children like me. It was also the house I once daydreamed about owning, but I wasn't going to think about that or any of the other memories associated with that time in my life. With Stavros, not until I was safely back in Toronto. Taking my suitcase and laptop case from the trunk, I trudged up the flagstone path to the front door. Someone had thoughtfully shoveled and salted both the stones and the porch. The antique brass lamps shone over the pathway. The porch railing was draped lavishly with swags of evergreen, accented occasionally by silver bells and scarlet velvet bows. A lovely wreath on the huge oak door echoed the theme. At least the B&B's management was taking care of my house, I thought, wanting to smile as I rang the doorbell. Decorations had rarely made me feel so welcome anywhere. Just a minute, dear. The door burst open. I came face to face with its owner. It's difficult to say who was more shocked, but I'm sure I hid it better than Vaia Papandro did. Clarice, what a lovely surprise, she said, her silver brows winging upward. So you're our mystery guest. I nodded agreement and knocked the snow off my boots as best I could before following her into the impressive foyer. It's good to see you, was all I could come up with. No need to be so formal. Call me Vaia, she said comfortably. After all, we were practically family once upon a time. The assertion made me uncomfortable, even though it was true. I'd spent many hours in her home during high school and college. Both Vaia and her late husband, Mick, had treated me like the daughter they'd never had. That had continued even after Stavros and I split up, until Mick's death in 2002. And standing in front of the beautiful cherrywood table that apparently served as the B&B's main desk, I regretted it. How have you been? I asked as she efficiently took me through the check-in process. Busy, Vaia said briskly, just the way I like to be. I hear you've done pretty well for yourself in the city. I smiled and nodded as she handed my credit card back to me. I like what I do, I said. That's what's important, Vaia leaned forward, lowering her voice. Stavros has been a lot happier since he quit practicing law and started running this place with me. You both run the place? You didn't know? Stavros and I bought this place 2 years ago. Of course. I couldn't imagine the man I'd loved and planned to marry doing that. He'd been so driven to succeed, to make a name for himself. People change, I supposed. Stavros had seemed different when I saw him at his dad's funeral and my mom's. I put it down to the circumstances on both occasions, but looking back on it, I should have known it was more than that. Not that it was any of my business, I told myself grimly. Stavros was clearly still deeply rooted in Fredericksville and all that it entailed. My views on the subject remained the same. Vaia continued chattering away while I signed the old-fashioned register. My silence evidently wasn't an issue. Then my tired brain latched onto something she just said, and I had to repeat it to be sure I hadn't misunderstood. You don't usually take reservations over the holidays? No, dear. I grabbed onto the idea like a lifeline. Then maybe I should find somewhere else to stay. Nonsense. We're happy to have you. Just let me call Stavros and he'll take your things up to your room. I can manage, I began, but Vaia had already picked up the telephone. Defeated, I sank down in a nearby chair and waited for the inevitable. When Stavros appeared, I was glad I'd taken the precaution of sitting, every bit as big and vital as I remembered, with hair and eyes the color of rich, dark chocolate. He still made my heart race just by smiling at me. It's nice to see you, Clarice, Stavros said. You look good. So do you, I replied. And it was true. The strain I'd noticed in his striking angular face at Ma's funeral was gone, and there was definitely a new spring in his step. Probably a new woman in his life, I thought sourly. I put her in the Windsor room, Vaia told him. Good choice. Stavros slipped the strap of my lap laptop case over his shoulder and picked up my suitcase with his other hand. "Is this it?" "Yes," I said, getting up. "I'm only going to be here for a few days." In my experience with women, that usually doesn't matter. Stavros ignored my snort, took my key from Vaia, and nodded his dark head. "This way." I followed him up two steep flights of stairs and a short distance down a narrow hallway in awkward silence. As Stavros unlocked the door, I asked, "Why did you accept my reservation?" He shrugged, set my suitcase beside the queen-size bed and my laptop on the antique vanity nearby. "I know you haven't been back for a while," Stavros said after a moment. "It seemed to me you needed a place to stay. It was the least I could do. Kind of you, under the circumstances. If that's how you choose to see it," he put the key down and sighed. "Claire, I know you're upset about your dad, but when they go, that's it. No second chances. I hope you'll find a way to work it out this time." "So do I, but I'm not holding my breath." I touched his forearm. "Thanks, Stavros. No problem, Claire. If you need me, I'm just down the hall. Second door on the left." Stavros' words should have reassured me, but instead, the notion of having him so close was vaguely disturbing. For years, I believed I was completely over him, but three innocent little words suddenly had me questioning that. "If you need me." It had been years since I needed him, and yet I never managed to connect with any other man on the same level as I had with Stavros. He was a habit, nothing more. I unpacked quickly and changed into my most comfortable jeans and a jade crew neck sweater. I tried hard to believe the words I'd consoled myself with every time I missed Stavros, that I'd mistaken lust for love, and it took me a long time to figure it out. What we shared couldn't have been real. It failed its first and only test. When I wanted to try my luck in Toronto, Stavros insisted on staying in Fredericksville. He hadn't even tried to make me see things his way. He told me I'd have to go alone, saying that he'd wait for me until I realized how much I missed him in Fredericksville. His words had infuriated me. I handed him his engagement ring and walked out, saying that he'd wait a very long time. 6 months after I ended our engagement, he'd presumably fallen in love because he'd asked another woman to marry him. Even though they were engaged, it didn't last. This knowledge brought me comfort, even years after the fact. The more things change, the more they stay the same. The sudden thought made me smile. My mom had repeated the adage time and time again. As a girl, I'd wondered what she meant. Now I knew. Dwelling on the past wasn't going to get me anywhere, but maybe it was finally time to move forward with Stavros, to regain the friendship we'd once had before we were romantically linked. Maybe then I'd be able to get on with my life, find a man, fall in love. But first, I had a few other wounds to work on. A glance at my watch told me it was still early enough to call Alina, but I decided to wait. As advertised, the charming room had high-speed internet access, so I checked my email and put out a few fires before shutting down my laptop again. The holidays were one of the busiest times of year for my small event planning firm. Being out of town while we were in the thick of it wasn't the soundest business decision I'd ever made. Strangely enough, I found I didn't care about that. I had a very good assistant, Pen, who was holding down the fort. If anything seriously came up, she'd handle it. My forced vacation in Fredericksville wasn't going to be painless, but I'd survive. Alina and Nate's small home was on the northern edge of town, near the new mall. As I drove past the following morning, I gaped at the huge expanse of shopping space, amazed and happy that I'd be able to augment the few gifts I'd actually found the time to purchase in the city. I half expected to make do with what I could get at the pharmacy or the bookstore. "We even have indoor plumbing now," Alina said acidly when I commented on it. I laughed and hugged her again. "I didn't mean it like that. You know it. I'm just surprised you didn't say progress comes to Bedford Falls at last." "Well, if the shoe fits." I ducked when she took a playful swing at me. "Come on, you used to think it was funny, too. I don't laugh at It's a Wonderful Life anymore," Alina glowered at me. "I've grown up." I held up my hands in surrender. "Okay, marriage does that to a person, I'm told. Actually, I think it's motherhood that's finished the job." For a few seconds, I didn't understand. I didn't grasp the full implication. Then I burst into tears and grabbed her. We held each other and cried for quite a while. Then Alina wiped her eyes and put the kettle on. "Why didn't you tell me?" I demanded after I'd regained my composure. "I thought I just did," Alina grinned. "Over the phone wasn't doing it for me, Claire. I wanted to see your face. I'm glad I waited." "Geez, Alina, this is the best news I've heard in a long time." I sat down at the kitchen table and blew out a breath. "Well, now there's a niece or nephew in the mix. You'll probably see me a little more often." "Was this better than finding out that Stavros owns the B&B you're staying at?" she asked with a straight face. Instinctively, I swore. "You knew? Duh. You know how small this town is. If you asked, I would have told you." Alina's smile was smug. "But you never did, so it's irrelevant, you know. He's moved on." I stared at my hands. "The most I can hope for from Stavros is friendship. That's what you think." It was my turn to glare. "Don't go there, all right? You can't run forever." "I'm not running. I'm just talking about this right now." "Seems to me that you are." Alina sat down across from me to wait for the kettle to boil. "When is the baby due?" "June. Do not change the subject." "I was just trying to get back to it." "Clarice. Pretty good mom voice, but find someone else to practice on." I stood up. "Need anything at the mall?" "You just got here. At least have some tea." "I will when I get back." "I won't be long." Alina sighed. "I guess I could use a couple of things." 3 hours later, I chopped until I was a trembling mess, carrying 4 large bags in each hand. After a quick dinner with Alina and Nate, I headed back to the B&B and wrapped everything. I'd gone a little overboard, but it had been a long time since I'd been able to do more than slip a gift certificate inside a card, order flowers, or send a fruit basket. Such was my newfound holiday spirit that I picked up a bottle of Glenlivet for Stavros and a silk scarf for Vaya. I put them under the huge pine tree in the front parlor before I headed out on Christmas Day. Exhausted, I was looking forward to relaxing in a hot bath and lots of sleep, but I was too restless. I tossed and turned for nearly an hour after I'd climbed into the big, cozy bed. My thoughts were racing. The next day was Christmas Eve. I'd have to face Dad at long last. I knew I could handle it. I always did. But every time I imagined seeing him, I felt like the sad young woman he'd written off as a waste of time and energy. Added to what Alina said about Stavros earlier, all the mental gymnasts had the same effect on me as several cups of espresso. Finally, I sat up in disgust. Normally, I would have booted up my laptop and done some work, but that held little appeal. Food might help, I thought, and maybe something to read. I'd noticed a well-stocked bookshelf at the end of the hall, and Vaia had encouraged me to help myself to whatever was in the refrigerator after hours. I made it downstairs and back with a light snack, a meatloaf sandwich, a handful of oatmeal raisin cookies, and a glass of milk. Well, a light snack for an emotional eater like me. I stashed everything in my room and then went in search of a book. That's when Stavros emerged from his room, blinking and shirtless, navy pajama bottoms rode low on his lean hips. "Everything okay?" he asked. I almost dropped the Minette Walters mystery I'd chosen from the top shelf. Hastily, I averted my eyes from his broad, hair-dusted chest. "Fine. Sorry I disturbed you." You didn't. I was awake. I frowned. "Me too." "Nervous about tomorrow?" "What else?" "I don't pretend to know you anymore, Clarice. Could be that there's something more pleasant on your mind. Good night." I stared at his closed door for a couple of seconds, tempted beyond belief to fling the book at it. Then I stalked back down the hall to my own room. By the time I finished my small feast and a few chapters of the book, I was able to smile at the memory of Stavros, half-dressed and rumpled. One thing was for sure, the years had been kind to his body. He was still lean, but had filled out in all the right places. Telling myself that I didn't care, I turned off the light and snuggled under the blankets. It still took me a while to fall asleep, but for a different reason altogether. Gathering in our family home for Christmas had always been a source of joy to Alina and I, regardless of Dad's crankiness and Mom's unceasing but ineffectual efforts to smooth things over. But without Mom's comforting, loving presence, going back to the house where I grew up was nearly intolerable. Sitting in his ragged old recliner, a scowl on his lined face, Dad mumbled a greeting to me and then gave his attention back to the television. I had to hide a smile when I realized he was watching a soap opera. Maybe he was mellowing a bit in his old age, after all. I dismissed the idea as I placed the gifts I'd brought with the rest under the tree. It was the fabulous fake fur he'd bought when Alina and I were teenagers over everyone's objections. The fact that he was still using the hideous thing spoke volumes. Alina and I finished preparing dinner and served it. Dad didn't have an appetite, but then again, neither of us were the cook our mother had been. I lasted through dessert, a delectable hazelnut tort I'd picked up from an excellent local bakery, but Dad wouldn't eat that either. "Are you feeling all right, Dad?" Dad looked at me and nodded. "Fine." I picked up my nearly untouched slice and walked into the kitchen. Alina followed, the strain of the moment evident in her face. "Don't go," she said. "It's like I'm not even here," I said, my eyesight getting foggy. I nonchalantly wiped away a tear. "If I stay, I'm going to say something I'll regret. What time do you want me to come tomorrow?" "We're doing gifts around 11. I'm hoping dinner will be ready by 5:00. "Listen, Claire, I have an idea. Let's hear it." I smiled to show her I was okay. "Why don't you ask Vaia and Stavros to join us? I think Dad would like that." "Is that the only reason? You're not matchmaking?" Alina grinned. "Think whatever you like, but you have to admit it's a true brainwave." "Genius," I admitted. "If Dad's wearing his party face, I just might get enough. I just might. Wait, sort of. I just might get through tomorrow. I hope they don't already have plans. Well, I just happened to bump into Vaia this afternoon, and she mentioned that it's just the two of them this year. Her sister had a fall a few months ago and isn't up to much yet, especially not driving here from Sudbury. I'm sold. I'll call you when I know for sure. I kissed Alina's smooth cheek. Have I told you lately that I love you, kid? I'm not sure you've ever told me, not in words. She hugged me hard. I love you too. I laughed, then headed for the kitchen door. See you tomorrow. Entering the B&B, I discarded my boots, hung my coat in the hall closet, hefted my purse onto my shoulder, and made for the stairs. Clarice? I turned in surprise. The door to the parlor was slightly ajar. As my eyes adjusted to the low lighting in the hallway, I could see a faint flickering within. Yes? How did it go? I pushed the door open a little farther. Stavros was sitting on one of the comfy sofas by the fireplace, a snifter in his hand. Low flames burned on the hearth, lending the room a golden glow. Let's just say that I'd enjoy a shot of whatever you're having. His smile warmed me. Have a seat. I'll get you one. The first sip of cognac burned on the way down, but it felt good. Thanks. My pleasure. So, just a sec. I need to get the rest into me first. I took a couple of quick sips. There's not much to tell. He barely spoke to me. I don't think things are ever going to get better, Stavros. Not in this lifetime. He watched me down the rest of the cognac in silence, then got up to pour me another. I'm sorry to hear that, was all he said as he handed it over. You okay with it? It used to really hurt, but suddenly you're above it? I know. You could always see right through me. As I spoke, I felt a pang. Missed the closeness we'd shared for so long. Other than Mom and Alina, you're the only other person who ever took me just as I am. Bad temper, nasty habits and all. I never got around to thanking you for coming to her memorial service, did I? No need. I loved her too, and Mom loved you. I sighed. I miss her so much, and I miss my father. Claire, it's really important that you try to patch things up while you still can. Parents can be stubborn, just like we were as kids. I know it's easier than done, but my dad loves you. In his own way, I suppose he does. But I'm so tired of feeling like I don't measure up in his eyes. He just wants you to be happy. Are you? I don't know. I guess. Maybe I would be if I didn't disapprove every single choice I've ever made. Come on, he's proud of you, of what you've accomplished. Oh, I think I don't know if I said this right. Maybe I would be if he didn't disapprove every choice I've made. I shook my head and tapped the rim of his snifter with the fingertip. Exactly how many of these have you had? Stavros didn't smile. I know, because he told me. That took the wind out of my sails. When? I asked when I could speak again. Last time we played chess. Another surprise. And when was that? A couple of weeks ago. While I digested that news, the only sound in the room was the crackling of the burning logs. Finally, I said, I see. Do you? Stavros asked quietly. I swallowed. Before I could find words, he took my hand. Just that simple contact electrified me, watching him lift it to his lips, feeling him kiss my fingers one by one. I forgot to breathe. Every good intention I had flew out of my head. His intention was clear. I could have escaped if I truly wanted to, but as his arms enfolded me, I found I didn't. I knew it was crazy, but I was hungry for this, for him, and had been for a very long time. Stavros' lips were as firm and deliciously eager as I remembered, and I couldn't hold back a low groan of approval as he pulled me closer and deepened the kiss. It went on and on, becoming more intense every moment. "Is this a good idea?" I whispered. "I don't know." Stavros kissed me again, very slowly. "I've tried so hard to forget you, but I can't. It's like you're in my blood." "That's the cognac." His laughter warmed my lips. "Lord, I've missed you." I touched his hand, his hard-boned face with my fingertips. "Right back at you. But let's worry about tomorrow when the time comes. Speaking of which, how would you and Bahia like to come to our place for dinner?" Stavros nipped my bottom lip. "On one condition. Let's hear it. You'll stick around to have dinner with us on New Year's." "That sounds a little like blackmail to me." "Quid pro quo, Clarice." Stavros tipped my head back a little further, gaining better access to my mouth. "What do you say?" I didn't answer him with words. We sat there in the near darkness for a long time, and though things got pretty heated, I stopped short of inviting Stavros into bed. I ached to do it, burned for him, but the memory of the soul-deep pain I'd felt when I lost him the first time was enough to keep me focused on what could happen if I gave in to my urges. Stavros walked me to my room, though, and left me at the door with a sizzling kiss that reminded me forcefully of what I was missing. Watching him walk to his own room, I hesitated, tempted beyond belief to call him back. Instead, I went to my lonely bed and tried without success to sleep. I slipped out of the B&B just after 10 o'clock on Christmas Day. I left a note for Bahia and Stavros on the kitchen table, along with the gifts I'd brought for them. For the first time since my arrival in Fredericksville, I felt optimistic about the possibility of a pleasant visit with my family. I'd work on my promise to stay in town until New Year's later. Fortified by coffee and a French cruller, I guess it is, I parked my car behind Nate and Alina's in the driveway practically at 11 o'clock on the dot. After we opened our gifts and Alina and I retired to the kitchen, Nate made himself scarce long enough to call his parents in Nova Scotia. This was the first Christmas he'd spent in Fredericksville, and I knew he was feeling a little homesick, so I took extra special care with the side dish I was making for him, a candied yam casserole his mom made every year, which earned me a fervent kiss on the cheek when he reappeared. "Smells just like home," Nate whispered. "Thanks, love." "Ahem," Alina murmured. "Who bought the yams?" Nate grinned and kissed her, though not on the cheek. "Beauties they are," he said. I turned away from the sight of them, so happy and secure in their love for each other. Would I ever have what they shared? I had to wonder. Bahia and Stavros arrived at 4 o'clock. Dad hadn't said much beyond a few mutterings over his gifts, which had sounded vaguely approving to my surprise, and was playing cribbage with Nate in the dining room. I embraced Bahia first, my eyes meeting Stavros' knowing look over her shoulder. His hug helped as much as hers had. In that moment, I was so grateful to both of them for coming that I could have cried. Instead, I kissed Stavros' lean cheek and whispered in his ear, "How'd you sleep? Better than you did, I'd imagine," he teased. "Where should I put this stuff?" They brought wine and a couple of home-baked pies, despite my assertion that we didn't need anything. And as I led the way to the kitchen, I thanked Stavros profusely. "If my mom's pumpkin pie doesn't mellow your dad, nothing will," he said. "True. She's been baking for Christmas for the past 4 days. There's only the two of us, though I know the old boy's got a weakness for pie." Unfortunately, neither the presence of the visitors nor Vaia's incredible pie seemed to have the desired effect on Dad. True, he wasn't quite as cantankerous as usual, but he was still aloof and offhanded when he addressed me. I was on the verge of getting up from the table when intervention came from a completely shocking source. "That's enough, you miserable old goat," Vaia said. She was quivering with indignation, her color suddenly high. "Theodorus Polios, it's Christmas, for heaven's sake. If you can't keep a civil tongue in your head, then get out of here right now." I covered my mouth to contain a gasp, then incredulous laughter. I risked a glance at Dad. He actually seemed ashamed of himself. He was also looking at Vaia the way he looked at Mom. Hastily, I started cleaning the dessert plates. I mumbled something about getting more coffee for everyone and fled to the kitchen without looking at anyone else. I sensed someone behind me just as I started stacking plates in the sink. "That was fun, wasn't it?" I asked, expecting Alina. "I deserved it." Hearing Dad's voice made me jerk. China clinked together. "Yes, you did," I said without turning. "I owe you an apology," he began. "Just one?" "Claire, honey," Dad's voice wobbled. "If I went on for a week, I don't think I could tell you how sorry I am for the way I've been, for the way I've treated you." I froze and just listened. Outside the kitchen window, snowflakes danced on a stiff wind. I wished I was in the backyard with them. "Talking about my feelings has never been easy for me," he continued haltingly. "But I never meant for you to think I don't love you, Claire. I do. It's just that you remind me so much of myself when I was younger, and that's why you've acted like you couldn't stand me for half of my life, because I'm like you. Alina's easy. She's the same as your mom was, sweet and sunny, but with you, everything's a fight. Like you said, the acorn doesn't fall far from the oak." I was as relieved as I'd been angry a moment before. "So you don't object to my politics or my profession? Or think I should have stayed in Fredericksville, no matter what I really wanted out of life? I wished you'd stayed closer to us, but I respected your choice, and I still do. Too bad it took you 10 years to tell me that." There was a bite to my words that I couldn't help. "I know. Look, Claire, is it too late for us to start over for a foolish old man?" "You're not that old," I snapped. Then, as I wanted to for what felt like forever, I hugged him. Dad stood stiffly for a moment as though unsure what to do, then hugged me too, fiercely. When he drew back, his green eyes were suspiciously bright. "So we're okay?" We will be, if you'll just tell me one thing. Name it. When were you planning to share the news that your suite on Vaia Papadandro? To my amazement, Dad blushed a deep red. Even the tips of his ears were rosy. I thought Elena would have told you. She didn't. You don't mind, do you? He asked cautiously. Are you kidding? Vai is perfect for you. I hugged him again. Just like her son is perfect for you. Well, that would make an interesting double date, Dad. Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. But know this, that boy has been pining for you. Stavros does not pine. Dad shrugged. Well, something's kept him getting married. Something's kept him getting married, though there have been plenty of options. You still love him, don't you? No, I replied too quickly. Claire, I may be old, but my eyesight is still pretty good. You could barely keep your eyes off each other all through dinner. I smiled. He was right, but I wasn't about to admit it. You're a romantic at heart, aren't you, Dad? Never been accused of that before, he groused. You probably never will be again, either, but that doesn't make it any less true. I kissed his cheek. I love you, Dad, but I'm not letting you meddle in my personal life. Elena says you don't have one. My sister talks too much. Honey, give Stavros a chance. That's all I'm saying. There's no point. His life is here. Mine is in the city. Could be he's figured out a way to fix that. I couldn't read his expression. Dad, did he say something? I asked sharply. Claire, find out. I swore under my breath, but when I turned to give Dad a small piece of my mind, he'd already gone. The rest of the evening went better than I'd ever dared to hope, but things took a strange turn when Vaia announced that she was spending the night. Then there was a brief silence, and then we all erupted in laughter. It's hard to say whose face was redder, Dad's or Vaia's. Can I hitch a ride home with you? Stavros asked when we'd subsided. That can be arranged. Our goodbyes said we walked to my car. On the way to the B&B, we were both quiet. I couldn't think of a single safe subject to discuss that hadn't already been covered, and Stavros seemed disinclined to chat anyway. When we arrived, Stavros walked around the car to help me out. Due to the dresser high-heeled boots I'd worn for the occasion, I held his arm as we walked into the house, clutching the shopping bags and holding my gifts in my other hand. Lovely party, Stavros said finally as he took my coat. I laughed. The end of it was, I murmured. I don't know how to thank you. He smiled and pointed upward. I glanced toward the ceiling, unsurprised to see mistletoe hanging from the small chandelier. I can think of one way, he said. I rested my hands on his chest. You must have thought of it this afternoon, because that wasn't there when I left this morning. Wasn't it? Stavros asked, his dark eyes alight. You know it wasn't. I kissed the slightly stern line of his mouth, reveling in the way his lips responded to the light touch of mine. Maybe my mom put it up. You know her. He put his arms around me and pulled me flush against him. It was all I could do not to groan. He felt so good. I'm sure she did. I kissed him again, not quite so gently. You'd better not be teasing, Stavros said hoarsely when I stopped. I smiled. I knew I was having a huge chance, or taking one, but I'd taken what Dad had said to heart. Maybe I had given up on Stavros, on us, too easily. Even if we only managed one night together, at least I'd have the memory of it. to keep me warm for a while. I've never been so serious in my life. Stavros didn't give me a chance to change my mind. He took me to his room, bolted the door, and began undressing me. Between kisses, I got him out of his own garments. When he knelt to remove my tall black boots, I leaned back on my elbows to watch him. Somehow, seeing Stavros perform this very personal service was extremely erotic. When he glanced up at me, I saw the gleam in his eyes and realized that he was feeling the heat, too. "Maybe I should have left them on," he quipped, reaching for me. I laughed and kissed him. "Next time," I promised. It was the last time either of us spoke for quite some time. Loving Stavros during the long night that followed stirred up a lot of old emotions. We'd always been good together physically, but the experience and maturity both of us had acquired within the last decade made things even better. His strength and tenderness remained as compelling as before, but Stavros was a man now, not a boy, and determined to please me in every way. He knew how. I could only hold on and respond in kind. The sky was tinted a deep rose when we were finally still. Head resting on his shoulder, I wondered fleetingly when I'd last been so sated, so content. Then Stavros asked, "When are you leaving?" I nuzzled his chest, inhaling the sandalwood and citrus scent clinging to his skin and sighing with pure pleasure. "I said I'd stay until New Year's, remember? You were just humoring me. Is that a polite word for lying?" Stavros stroked my hip. "No, I'm sorry, that wasn't very nice of me. After all, there is a precedent for what you're suggesting," I conceded. His chuckle was a sweet sound. "So you are staying for a little while?" "I am." "Great. Let me up for a minute, will you?" I did, and watched with undisguised appreciation as Stavros crossed the room to his bureau, as naked as the day he was born. The view I got when he returned was nicer still. In fact, I was so distracted that I didn't notice what he'd just taken out of his sock drawer until he put it in my hands. I'd have known the tiny square blue velvet box anywhere. "Claire, I don't expect you to put it on right now. I just want you to keep it for a few days. Look at it. Think about whether you'd ever consider wearing it again." Stavros spoke in a rush, his expression earnest and so very vulnerable. "Stavros, let me finish," he begged. "I'm taking on another partner in the business, two of them, actually, which is going to leave me free to relocate, if the need should arise, that is." I couldn't believe what I just heard. "Who?" was all I could get past the lump in my throat. "Your dad and Nate." "Relocate?" I repeated as the full implication of the word penetrated the fog surrounding my brain. "Anywhere you want me to go, even Toronto? Strangely enough, I found a few job prospects there." Stavros touched my cheek. "Imagine that," I said faintly. "I know this is sudden, that you'll need some time to think," he went on. "Actually, all I need is to figure out how to get you to stop talking and kiss me." Stavros froze. "Claire?" He closed his eyes for a second. When he opened them again, Stavros' lashes were wet. "I was such an idiot." "No argument there. So was I." "You really want to marry me?" "Try rewording the question a bit, Romeo." Stavros cursed slightly while trying not to laugh. "Will you marry me, Clarice?" he asked. I snagged a handful of his soft hair and dragged his head down. After I kissed him senseless, I had only one thing left to say. "Yes, Stavros, I'll marry you." Stavros and I were married in the spring in the little church where our respective parents had spoken their wedding vows decades before. The way things seemed to be headed, it wouldn't be long before his mom and my dad took their own walk down the aisle, something that delighted us both to be married as well as stepbrother and sister. We'd just gotten settled in our new house when an urgent call came from Nate, sending us racing back to Fredericksville. Stavros and I arrived with only minutes to spare before our nephew made his debut. Until I saw Stavros holding Alina and Nate's baby boy, I hadn't given the question of having children with him much thought at all. Seeing the new baby come out so innocent and fragile, and the bond that he instantly shared with his mother, brought out a strong maternal instinct in me. Apparently, Stavros felt similarly, with wonder in his dark eyes as he gently cradled little Peter close with his big hands. Stavros and I were born to be parents together. Selfishly, I wanted Peter to myself for a while, but in that moment, I knew beyond any doubt that one day we'd have our own family, everything in its time. Another of Mom's favorite sayings popped into my head as Stavros carefully handed Peter over to me. In fact, I heard it so clearly that I could have sworn Mom herself whispered it in my ear. Stroking Peter's velvety cheek, smiling at the man I loved, I realized Mom had been right about that, too. 10 years before, I hadn't been ready for Stavros or what we could have together. Waiting for it had just made everything that much sweeter. Okay, well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Romance Program. As always, thank you so much for listening to my stories. This has been Volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. Have a great week. Take care of yourselves. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.